Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
And you can also access this show, probably by next week or in a couple of days, at KXORadio.com.
Just keep hitting your F5 button and reloading the website until it pops up. Good morning, everybody. Hey, wait. Maria's community calendar has an item for Saturday morning.
Yes, there is one community calendar that I just found out yesterday. There is the Rip Cook-Off, the annual Rip Cook-Off in Hauteville. So I will be there bright and early.
So, like a talent guest appearance
and,
on KUBO.
And
let's
also,
talk about it.
And also, just to let everybody know that my boss, Mr. Michael Horn, our director of behavioral health, will be playing with his band, Los Outpatients. So it's several members from our department from behavioral health. That includes here.
We're going to kick
Scott
all the kids
Dudley.
Out of the sandbox in the swing.
Yeah.
We're going to be over there playing.
Scott Dudley and Adolfo Estrada will be there, and as well as, I think, maybe Dr. Camacho.
Yes, indeed.
And Rodolfo Aguayo, who is the HR interim director at the county, so there's going to be a lot
we
of people.
We were practicing last night using ribs for drumsticks so that we could eat and do our percussion at the same time, and it's looking pretty good.
It's just, you know.
It's a little.
It is. They've come a long way.
Windex on the drum kit. But
and hopefully Scott is dressed appropriately.
Sigh. Appropriate for rock and roll, okay? That's where we go.
Appropriate, but not, what can I say?
Outlandish.
Not outlandish, yeah, okay. Or weird.
Okay, so tomorrow, Carrot Festival, Hauteville, we'll see you there. Have fun, eat lots of ribs. They're good for you somewhere,
yes.
Somehow. Good morning, welcome. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness. 337-8874 is the phone number. Our guest today is Esther Castillo. She's an MFT intern and a mental health counselor for Imperial County. She grew up as a substance abuse counselor for the county, and so she's got that one foot on each side background, you know, that kind of substance abuse stuff and the mental health stuff. And she's working in the lots of programs. But today we're going to focus on the Adult Mental Health Service Act, Adult Dual Diagnosis or Co-Occurring Disorder Program. Morning, Esther.
Good morning, you guys. Good morning, Maria. Good morning, Scott. How are
Good
you
morning.
Guys doing?
Good.
Like Scott said, I do work for Dual Diagnosis Program, pretty much working under Mental Health Service Act. Pretty much it's been an interesting year. I've been there for 2 years with that program. It's been a very good program, working on the adult program, dual diagnosis. Pretty much, like Scott has said, the program we've worked started with drug and alcohol. It's my passion, drug and alcohol program. And what
I mean, not literally, like helping people
I mean,
your passion,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. We're helping the people working with the drug and alcohol program. What I really loved about that program is that we've helped the program with clients, having them get mental health services and seeking them or linking them to drug and alcohol groups, seeking a doctor, and getting them to do individual therapy. So it's been really, really interesting.
How for people who have like really serious mental health problems, how common is it, I guess, for people to, you know, use substances when they have that problem?
You know what? A lot of people will judge these clients and they'll think that they're using drugs because they like it, because they want to, and because they have nothing else to do. In reality,
but that's the perception.
That's the perception. In reality, is the what's happening is that they have a lot of other stuff going on, a lot of emotional issues, a lot of trauma, a lot of mental health issues, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, a lot of stuff they're covering up, a lot of emotional stuff that's going on, a lot of family issues. So a lot of stuff that they come in that they have nobody else that they've talked to about.
This is a program that, you know, behavioral health is trying to combat, you know, just reduce stigma and reduce the stigma of mental illness. And then you also put, you know, the alcohol and drug, which, you know, a lot of people, you know, think that, you know, people who are using drugs are mostly criminals or just, you know, just
exactly.
Slackers.
Slackers.
Yeah,
low life.
So now you mix it up and you put it together.
Exactly. And in reality, a lot of them has been either because they're dealing with a lot of trauma, a lot of stuff that they have been exposed to, and their only way to deal with it or the only way to kind of make it through life is either use and cover it up. I call it a Band-Aid. they kind of, you know, drink alcohol or use drugs because they want to cover it up and they can focus and they don't want to deal with the flashbacks. And
well, I mean, look at the movies and look at the shows. When somebody breaks up with somebody or their relationship is breaking up, what do? When they get into a fight, they go and deal with their emotions by going to the bar and getting drunk.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
what shows do you watch?
Everything. They're all on. What do you mean?
You know, there's a perfect movie.
What shows are you not watching? What kind of a show are you watching?
I was watching the San Diego State game last night, and they lost, but I didn't see any bar scenes.
One perfect.
They probably will be there.
One perfect show, 28 Days. Sandra Bullock. That's one of the perfect movies. It's like, you know, if you've seen that movie, 28 Days, where, you know, she's drinking, she gets caught up, and everything else goes on. If you first watch, you're thinking, okay, it's an alcoholic, she gets caught up.
It's a drinking problem.
Yeah, drinking problem, okay, yeah, okay, woman gets caught up, she goes to rehab and this and that. Mm-hmm. But in reality, if you really look at the movie very closely, mom pretty much was an alcoholic. Mom pretty much had a lot of issues. There wasn't that parenting. There wasn't that bonding. To her, it was a joke. But yet, there wasn't that mother bonding in there. A lot of stuff went on. Sister, you know, wasn't there. Sister tried to help her. And so a lot of stuff going on that, you know, throughout her life.
So mom, like, basically abandoning the kids, causing the kid pain.
Yeah.
And then the pain kind of, the kid kind of falls into the same trap the mom was in.
Exactly. I mean, maybe in that movie we don't know about if there's any.
So the mom was probably subjected to pain too.
Maybe, and the thing is, who knows? We don't know if there was any abuse in the movie. There's just the movie. We don't know about the other stuff. However, in reality, with a lot of our clients that come into our program, there is abuse. There is whether it's violence, domestic violence, whether it's sexual abuse, whether it's domestic molestation, things like that.
Is that common?
It's very common.
So you're saying that these mental health problems, severe mental health problems, aren't standing alone. They're surrounded by all this abuse, this Band-Aid substance use. You know, it's interesting you called it a Band-Aid because I thought, okay, a Band-Aid doesn't heal the wound.
Exactly.
But it does stop the bleeding.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. Because in reality, when you take off the Band-Aid, the scar's still there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It may not even, you know, if you didn't put like a little stuff on it, it may still be an open wound.
Exactly. So that's why I call it a Band-Aid, I guess. No, I call it that because it's more what the client would kind of relate to and understand it better.
So with you, I mean, you have the background from the substance abuse.
Yes.
And now you're a mental health counselor. Mm-hmm. And mental health counselors are trained to detect mental illness.
Yes.
But with your background, you detect both.
Yes. So it helps a lot with me in regards to, like, not just finding out what's happening with the client, what they're using. A lot of our clients who are in our program in the mental health, they're very skeptical about asking about mental health. And even then, with drug and alcohol, they're afraid to tell you about all the mental health because they don't want to think that they're crazy.
So you're saying that the people with mental health disorders who've been identified
exactly.
and have gotten over that stigma
yes.
don't want the additional stigma of being a drug user.
Yes. Well, that's what I'm saying.
And conversely, vice versa.
It's a double dose. It's a double dose of stigma.
Yes. And believe it or not, when they're in my office, they don't want to be considered they're drug addicts. They don't want to be considered they're mentally ill. Mm-hmm. They want to kind of go half and half. So it's really, you know, my job. I have to kind of be very cautious how I go around it and how I have to explain it to them.
You have to educate them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It really has to go baby steps with them, literally baby steps, and really comfort them and educate them. So you know what? I understand. I know it's very difficult. And once I get them to kind of comfort them and educate them, then they're willing to, okay.
It's like when when the perinatal program was open, it's currently in hiatus. And, you know, a lot of people, when they learned, oh, you know, I worked at perinatal or I would work on the summers there, they go, oh, how can you work there, you know, with women? They don't love their kids. I mean, can't they just stop using drugs? I mean, they love the drug more than their kids. And, you know, why can't they just stop? You know, mm-hmm. they like the drugs. Yeah. But you've been finding out that a lot of women
who use
drugs.
Yeah, and that goes back to that stigma. It's not that they don't love their children. It's just that they're in too much pain that in reality they don't want to hurt their children. And we are dealing with women like that, and it's not that they don't want their children to go through the pain that they've gone through. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women will do a lot of these sacrifices where they'll give their children a better home. Mm-hmm. And it's basically relabeling that and educating the community that, you know, they're in pain, and it goes back to the trauma. They don't want to expose their kids what they've already been exposed to themselves. because they are going through a lot of trauma themselves.
So these moms are just like other moms in terms of their love and caring for their children, but they have so much pain that they're having to act out in these kind of weird banded
ways.
They act out by using drugs to cope with their trauma.
They're just as loving as any other mother because they're just actually, they give much more love to these children, to their own children. I have one particular individual who just, she comes into my office and she loves her child so much. She gave her child to a foster parent, and she loves and she will cry every session, and she knows how much, and she knows she had to do the best thing for her child. And she's still fighting the system, and she's doing the best she can to get her life back on track. She's dealing with her own trauma, and she's trying to get herself back on track for it, and she wants to get through this trauma for her child.
So in the dual diagnosis program, that's one of the evidence-based programs that you offer to deal with trauma?
We have two evidence-based practice programs that we work with, the Seeking Safety and Imagery, which actually is called IRRT, which is Imagery, Imagery Rescripting Reprocessing Therapy. And there's two of them. Seeking Safety is also working with substance abuse clients. And the other one that I work with is pretty much one-on-one therapy. And it's pretty much role-playing. Actually, I wouldn't call role-playing, but it's one-on-one therapy with them. And it's been very effective with both clients. I've seen it in group therapy with them, Seeking Safety, and I've done it with them one-on-one, and I've done the imagery with them. The imagery is very intense. It's been very successful. I've had a couple cases where they have to be stable. They have to be very stable. And at first, some clients will look at me like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? But it's been very powerful, very powerful stuff, very powerful stuff. So
when you're doing therapy for trauma, though, I mean, it sounds like what you were describing with the Band-Aid and everything, that one of the whole, goals of people who have experienced trauma and have been impacted by, I guess it has to be impactful to be trauma. but so people have gone through that. It sounds like one of their real goals. I mean, if they use drugs to help ease the pain or help forget or help avoid that the memories or whatever, that speaks to how hard they're seeking to avoid this bad thing that happened and that's kind of haunting them.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you're looking at ways to deal with this with therapy, they have to come back and face-to-face it, or can sometimes they just go forward without that?
No, they have to be exposed to it. They have to face it, and it's exposure. And that's where there's a lot of resistance, but it goes back to the rolling with the resistance, and it's exposing them to their trauma. And the funny thing is that I'll tell them, you know what, they've already been through the trauma. It's basically, exposure. And the more they're exposed to it, it gets better, and it gets less intensive. So it's just pretty much, I call it like a movie, that when they first watch a very scary movie, that, the first time they watch it, it's really intense and it's very scary. After a couple of times, it's not as scary. They already know what's going on.
One of the things, for instance, is that when you're talking about trauma, it always seems that it's women.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have men also?
Believe it or not, there's more men that I have that are more exposed to trauma than I have on women.
You said that with a glint in your eye. Don't be one-upping me on the gender thing here.
I assume that more women that are exposed to trauma because of the, domestic violence or, sexual abuse or...
Exactly. I know that you had said that.
Do the genders manage trauma differently? Have you seen that in your experience? I mean, is that part of this or no?
You know what?
Do the men just kind of suck it up and move on and actually maybe that message is up worse?
Well, yeah, because then they start using drugs or, they're depression.
The men that I've had in my sessions, they really want to deal with this. There's a lot of embarrassment, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of fear. There's a lot of shame in it because they want to go on. But a lot of them have, when they come and tell me, and luckily I thank God because they've been able to tell me and they've been comfortable, but it's been a lot of shame and heart.
I just kind of bet because I'm thinking of my whole guy thing, and I was raised to be trauma proof. push me in the deep end of the pool and say, swim, kid. You know, I come home and some kid's been beating me up at school, and they'll say, well, yeah, go knock him out. You know, and so you've got this whole, you know, you're not supposed to, to be marked by pain. You're supposed to conquer it, you know.
Yeah, you're supposed to deal and overcome it.
Kind of makes it probably a little bit even more stigma-based for men to have this, I've been scarred by this.
What kind of trauma have they been exposed to, the men?
The majority of men that I've encountered have been sexual abuse and violence. Either they've been attacked and the sexual molestation from men.
From other men?
From other men. And incest. Mm-hmm. Majority of guys that I've encountered. And that's why they use. And yeah, exactly. There's that stigma. You're a man. Mm-hmm. You can't. You need to deal with it. You need to have. You're a macho.
And you didn't defend yourself.
A lot of these happened when they were probably young.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the other part is, because you were young, where was my mother? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you defend me? Mm-hmm. Where was everybody else?
Now, my understanding of trauma, more or less, is that trauma is not something really bad that happened to me a long time ago that I kind of filed in the really bad that happened to me a long time ago place. Trauma is something that keeps coming back up into my head.
And the trauma is that when it comes back, the flashbacks, I'll ask the questions. Because my question is, some people can actually deal with trauma, they can go on with life, and they're fine. I'll ask the question because, I was traumatized, I was exposed. And so I'll further ask the question, okay, any flashbacks, any nightmares? Some people will ask, they'll say, well, I can't be touched. I can't be behind people. People can't be behind me. I can't sleep. I'll even go in further into deeper. How's your relationship? How's your intimate relationship? How's your interaction with other
people?
How
are your dreams,
dreams, how's your interaction with people? Are you fighting the dreams? Are you waking up in hot flashes? I'll ask a lot of questions. Because that has a lot to do with it. People don't understand, I get mad, I get upset, I can't be around people. People looking, what's wrong with you? Why are you upset? Why you can't be around me? Why can't you be close? Some people can't have another person hug them or be behind, don't touch me. Hey, what's wrong with you? That has a lot to do with it because of the traumatized.
Yeah, more than just being inconvenient or being something that, you know, makes life more difficult. It sounds like it could make life unmanageable.
Exactly. And so a lot of people, happen is that, so they won't confront it, they'll go to the drug use. Or then they'll feel that they need to use, they'll feel that there's something wrong with them, the voices. They'll hear that, you're worthless, you're not worth being, something's wrong with you, you must be crazy. So then, that's where the mental health part comes in. And that's where they'll feel that they're low, they're not worth anything. So if they have a lot of combination of stuff going on, they can't keep a job.
If you're not worth anything, it's not worth seeking help either.
Exactly. Because, oh, my God, if I go talk to somebody, they're going to think I'm crazy.
And, well, a lot of times with people with trauma, they don't want to relive it. They want the first reaction when you have something traumatic is to forget about it, put it away somewhere.
Exactly.
And when they continue having flashbacks and they have nightmares or they can't sleep, and that's when, it's not in the closet.
Yeah.
It's not locked away.
And I actually had a client yesterday. We were trying to get into the whole assessment between the trauma focused. Mm-hmm. And he says, I put it under the rug. Mm-hmm. I left it there. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's under the rug. It's there.
But it's a lump under the rug that I trip over every time I try to walk across the room.
Exactly. So we kind of went through it, really slow. And we're going to get there. We're going to get there. So, we're going to walk through it slowly. So we kind of going through it very slowly with him. But he's getting there. He's getting there.
So you got this thing haunting you. And it's either popping up and haunting you, or you're avoiding it, and the avoidance itself is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But if you drink enough or get high enough, that numbs that away?
For a little bit.
Is a temporary solution?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what they do.
The Band-Aid.
That goes back to the Band-Aid, and it's just a cycle that goes over and over and over, and it doesn't get better.
So
it's
this
over
person,
up, and then here comes again those flashbacks, and then you drink some more, and then, when you're under the influence.
And it goes back to life being unmanageable.
I could imagine this being like a trial and error thing where this person has this thing going on in their life and they're not really like consciously going, okay, well, I'm going to try drugs because maybe that's the answer. But they go to a party and for whatever reason they have a couple of drinks or something and all of a sudden avoiding it quite as much.
Yeah.
Or it's not hurting me quite as much.
Exactly.
And you just kind of accidentally learned that this way of coping, this Band-Aid,
mm-hmm.
actually did some good. And all of a sudden, you're doing that a lot. And the more you do it, the more the costs of using start to add up in terms of the physical problems, the social and legal problems, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And it gets worse and worse to the point where if the bandit could have been taken care of sooner, it gets worse, then the mental health gets more worse, and everything just gets out of
hand. So the mental health fights back.
Exactly. So it just really gets really bad. I mean, and these were that's where the costs and benefits, that's where the pros and cons comes in. That's where we kind
of
work on.
Well, and think of this poor person set up in society, because now they're either a man or a woman with this trauma issue that may have its own serious, serious stigma with it. Mm-hmm. And now they've got the alcohol and drug problem with it. Definitely. I mean, people don't walk around saying, oh, those poor alcohol and drug users, someone needs to have compassion for them.
No.
It's like three strikes and...
You're in jail for life.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty hard place to be. Okay, so what we need to do, let's top of the hour. Let's go ahead and take a short break.
Okay.
Because this is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in the Imperial Valley. And we're going to come back after this short break, and we're going to look at some of the ways that Esther uses evidence-based treatment practice to work with people with dual diagnosis so that they can get their lives back and go on and get some recovery.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio for Imperial and Mexicali Valleys. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUPO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Also, remember, our phone lines are open. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And we're back.
Good morning. Yeah, welcome back.
We just wanted to hear the whole song. I never get to hear the whole song, so...
Yeah, you know, anytime you're talking about trauma, it brings up yours, so...
I know.
Thing is, you got to be careful what you talk about on breaks, because you got a therapist in the room, and you know those therapist people, they're listening for all the emotional content that stuff coming, and they're wondering, wait, what's going on with that?
I'm doing an evaluation as I'm watching you guys.
Let's talk about it. We're back, and as usual, if today's show grabs you somehow, podcast will be up on KXORadio.com in a very short period of time, as are all of our other shows, which we invite you to go back and kind of surf through, because... going through time, we've really accumulated a lot of expertise, and so it's kind of turning into kind of a problem-solving place where you can go back and get some information about anything that may be coming up in your wellness day.
But today we are talking to Esther Castillo. She is a mental health counselor for Imperial County Behavioral Health and working in the Adult Dual Diagnosed Program.
Yes. Good morning, you guys.
Welcome back.
All right.
So we kind of spent the first half of the show talking about trauma and its relationship to substance use and its relationship to other mental health problems.
Yes.
And that's your world, I guess, huh?
Yeah, pretty much for the past 2 years, that's what I've been doing, or getting pretty much with clients that have been referred to me, working with clients, adults, dual diagnosis, clients that have been assessed through me, or referred to the program, I have been assessed for clients that are with dual diagnosis, for trauma-focused patients, and I pretty much ask anybody to come into the agency for on State Street if they need to be assessed for trauma, and it goes through a process. A lot of our clients, usually if they meet the criteria, have a tool, and we go and we ask if there's flashbacks, any trauma for it, the criteria for it.
But, you know, going back, the process when you mentioned is that a lot of the people that a lot of the clients that are in the dual diagnosed, most of them came through the mental health side?
A lot of them came through the mental health side or the drug and alcohol program, or either referred through probation or they're referred, or they're walk-ins.
Because I'm thinking about, you know, the patients or the clients that are in behavioral health with a mental health diagnosis, and if they're taking medication and all of a sudden, you know, because they have to see a doctor or psychiatrist for the medication, that if they see all these finds out that they're using drugs, you know, sometimes their medication to deal with their anxiety or depression or doesn't help.
Yeah, they won't see them on the mental health side. They will refer them with us to drug and alcohol, and they'll send them with us. And a lot of the times, if they are doing drugs, the majority of our side, that's where I'll see them. And in reality, the majority of the time, we talked about the Band-Aid, it's because a lot of it is usually through trauma. Because of the reason why they use the drugs, either they've been exposed to domestic violence, sexual abuse, And I'll dig a little further. I always say I'm kind of nosy, but I'm nosy on the good side. I always tell the clients, I go, I'm nosy, but on the good side. And I'll be nosy because I want to know what's going on, why they're using, and where the mental health part came from, and where the drug abuse came from. And I will ask, and I will dig in regard to flashbacks, any trauma, where the drug abuse came from, any domestic violence, were they exposed to it. And they know that I will go further, and I'll go back, and I'll restate it. I'll just really continue until I get an answer. And they pretty much, they kind of...
But that wouldn't be, one's nature is just if somebody's asking you too many questions, just shut down and just not answer them? Especially with trauma, you know, just I don't want to talk about it.
Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. I've gotten creative with it. So far, I haven't had that yet. Sometimes they won't. Sometimes they're really mentally ill, they won't answer about it. And I go, that's fine, we'll talk about it later, and I'll go back to it. But I usually, so far, I've been lucky to have worked with them really well. I guess the rapport so far, I've been pretty lucky with them. Sometimes they won't, and that's fine. I go, that's fine, I won't talk about it. We'll go back later.
But eventually?
Eventually.
They open up.
And when I do finally get them, then there's a criteria, then there's an assessment tool. And when they're ready to do therapy, then I do ask them a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are stable, then there is the assessment process for therapy. And there's two ways to get them to do therapy. And they're seeking safety, and there's imagery. And one of the tools is the assessment. And I will ask them, and that is pretty much a more detailed about their trauma.
This sounds like a pretty deliberate process. I mean, this sounds like you're not just kind of like... Hey, it's the third customer today. I'm going to do this one this way.
No, I before I get to
you
the
don't
whole...
don't do that. Where are you been?
Yeah, before I get to the whole...
You're not Freud?
No. Before I get to the whole trauma, I have to get unstabilized. I just cannot do that whole, let's open up the whole wound and just let's do it. No, I really have to make sure that they're stable, and I really get there first.
So, and it sounds like from what you've described that some of these people are really leading chaotic lives.
Yes. I've had a couple clients that have been referred to me, and I understand, you know, sometimes, well, this client is trauma-focused, let's get them in there, and they'll refer me to therapy. And when I see them, either they're, one was referred to me, actually, one good case, she started banging herself, hitting herself on her legs, and I said, trauma-focused will be postponed, we're going to get her stabilized.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw her for a couple sessions, and once she was stabilized, then we started doing the whole assessment questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I did let her know that. Because she was aware that we were going to see her for trauma focused, but the first session started hitting herself, and I said, we're going to stop. So
a big part of therapy is having the right point of entry, getting people to stable enough.
Yeah.
So stuff like housing, stuff like getting them into substance abuse and maybe getting them some sober time. And
yes, sober time, therapy, group therapy, at least get them to drug and alcohol, at least get them to medication, appropriate medication, having them the case manager see them, having them getting the right linkage, the right assistance they need before they can get the therapy for trauma-focused. I mean, it's not just linking them to trauma-focused and here, let's get you therapy, mm-hmm. Let's get this taken care of. That would be great because they've been having the flashbacks. They've been having the nightmares. They've been having these hot flashes. They've been having to deal with this for years and years, and they've been coping with drugs and alcohol. And they've been doing it a good job. To them, they've been handling very well.
So for the outside people, it's like, you know, all these years they've been using drugs. They're just a drug user. But in reality, they don't know about the underlying issues, the trauma.
Exactly. So that goes back to the stigma. They've been using drugs, so they're doing okay. But in reality,
how many people out there, you know, just walking the streets and, you know, your family, like listeners, family members or neighbors or friends that, you know, are using drugs and they would just say, you know, he's just a bad, you know, just troublemaker or just a delinquent or a criminal and they've been using drugs. But how many of those people are using drugs and might have a trauma?
And that's the way of coping. That's the way of handling things.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some people who are just drug addicts and and they're
party animals, whatever.
And they don't have trauma, but
yeah,
there's a lot of them that do.
And there's also that have trauma and they're able to cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's those that, you know, they've been able to handle it, and there's those that really need the assistance.
So let's get this person and pretend that we've got them at some sort of stable place mm-hmm. where they're going to begin to work with you. What kind of stuff do you do with them?
Once they're stabilized, once they're in my office, then we get to the questionnaire. And the first questionnaire that I get in my office, I do. There's two of them. And if I feel that they need to do the imagery, then there's a questionnaire, and we'll get into that. And that's pretty much asking them, first of all, what's the worst incident or what's the scenario they want to work on? And they might have several scenarios. They might have had several incidents. And they want to give me all of them. And I said, just pick one, the most traumatic incident. And we'll go over that series. And sometimes after we get that one scenario, then I'll ask, okay, how long did it happen? Was it a one-time incident? And pretty much that. Then we go over a shame inventory, a fear inventory, a panic inventory, and pretty much all that. After we do that, then we go.
Well, hang on. Okay, so you got these emotional inventories.
Yes.
What are those for? I mean, what difference does it make?
All that is pretty much, and it's a series like maybe 30, 18, 19 questionnaires, mm-hmm. and it's pretty mm-hmm. much six pages. It's just kind of identifying how much was it for, how intense was it.
Are there different flavors of trauma, like a fear trauma versus a shame trauma versus?
It's a lot of emotions. It's a fear, panic.
Well, it could be, you know, when your fear of your life, you know, almost close death situation, you know.
It's fear, shame, guilt, hurt. It's all these emotions that they go through because they've been carrying it. They feel that they were shamed. It feels that it was their fault. A lot of it, they feel that it was their fault, their shame of themselves.
Which is different than just being scared to death.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, because they feel that they could have stopped it.
Mm.
Or somebody could have stopped it.
Yeah.
Or they feel that they led them on. You know, there's that guilt. Or if they told somebody, that family member said, you see, you did it.
You did it, mm-hmm. yeah. Especially for the sexual assaults.
Exactly.
And rapes where, yeah. well, and that's still people saying, oh, well, it's because look at the way she was dressed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got those. And that's where they feel that they're ashamed. So they
or maybe somebody who tried to tell their story and nobody listened to them or knew.
Well,
them.
Because it's like I said, a lot of people just, the first reaction is, no, I don't want to get there. You know, I don't want to go there with, you know, this person's trying to tell me a traumatic experience or something. Okay, well.
And how many of those families? How many of
you don't know how to deal with it.
Victims have gone through those.
You were probably dreaming.
Yeah. Or you know what? Not just that. You have those victims also that said that the family walked in, saw it, and left. And that is the most painful.
Ouch.
Yeah.
No kidding.
They walked in, they left, and they knew it. And that's the most painful. And that's the one that they don't. And they're not even angry at the perpetrator. They're angry at the person that walked in.
Why didn't you stop it?
And left.
Why didn't you stop me? Why didn't you help me? Why didn't you protect me?
Those are the ones. Why didn't you save me?
So trauma is not just fear. It could be significantly shame or anger or guilt or other.
So sometimes when I do the imagery, it's not even on the person, the perpetrator. They want to confront the person who left. So even there, when I do the imagery, when they're confronting, because it's basically confronting the child, because they're the child, they're telling me their story, and they're going to do the adult self, which is pretty them coming into the imagery. Mm-hmm. They're not even confronting the person that did what they did to them. They're confronting the person. So it's an interesting, in fact, that's the power of.
So you do this assessment, you figure out, you identify a trauma, mm-hmm. like out of
whatever.
The deck of cards.
Yeah.
Pick the best one.
Yeah.
Or worst one, and then you get the emotions that are tied to it. So you get a sense of what type of trauma it was, I guess. What happens? Where do we go?
And then when we get to the exposure, the trauma that they want to get, then we do the whole exposure part.
But how do you determine what kind of trauma therapy to do? Either the imagery mm-hmm. trauma or the seeking safety trauma?
It depends on where they're at. And it depends on how bad it is. If it's not as bad, that's kind of where I ask them. If it's not as bad, then we won't do the exposure part. Then we'll do the seeking safety. Then we'll do pretty much the walking step. Then we'll do the book. Then we'll do the journaling. Then we'll do the grounding, the contracts. Then we'll do the writing. Then we'll do the pros and cons. Because the seeking safety is pretty much ground, a lot of written work,
uh-huh.
a lot of imagery, a lot of... thinking, a lot of meditation.
But more in here and now or what?
It's pretty much here and now, kind of focus, keep you here, keep you on the stabilization. A lot of, okay, this is where we're at. Let's focus here. This is where we're at. More of a meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a more of like with our imagery. It's talking about it, getting you there, focus, let's get you on the exposure part. Seeking Safety is more of a workbook, like a kind of a curriculum workbook type. And it's kind of talking about it here and now. This is what we're doing. This is what we're
doing. So it's like a life guide or something going forward.
It is. It's life skills.
Okay.
And it's basically more of a journal, like a workbook, like a daily thing to do.
Evidence-based, huh?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay, so, but let's say you do have to do this exposure step with someone. What's that look like? I mean,
how intense.
Right, they spent their whole life avoiding remembering this stuff, and you're asking them to talk it out, to tell you the story.
To relive it.
And that's where sometimes, like I've mentioned, when we do the exposure part, the first time we do that, it is intense, and we do it a couple times. I mean, it's not just done once, it's done a couple times. There is a part where they have to listen to the tape. They have to hear it over and over again. It's pretty much exposing them over.
What is a tape? Of them?
Of them. When they're, as we're going through it, they're hearing themselves. It's pretty much exposing them, hearing themselves in through their imagery. The reason I call it very powerful because it is intense. It's very intense. I call it like watching a movie.
One of the things is, you know, why do you try to, you know, have so-and-so relive it again and relive it again and going, it's just...
Well, it's like a typical, I mean, a lot of our typical families say, well, let's not talk about it, just let it go.
Yeah. Let's not relive it. Yeah. Let's not, you know, mention about
it. And
that
somehow gives it more power.
Yeah. But this time, you're taking control of it.
So if I think of a movie that I saw when I was a kid that just terrified me, and then now I watch it as a middle-aged person for the 23rd time or whatever.
Yeah, it's not...
Like,
my hair, aren't standing up in the back.
No, you're
neck
saying,
anymore.
Well, the special effects weren't that great.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, it wasn't that bad.
Okay. And that, so that's kind of what this exposure thing does. Mm. Are you there to help people in case it gets too intense?
Yes, that's my.
How do you do that?
Pretty much, I guide them through it, and I kind of ask them, okay, how bad is it? Rate the number. Where are we at? I pretty much.
And if it gets really bad?
Well, first of all, my goal is not to have them leave the scene. We don't leave the scene.
Okay.
We just kind of still, where are we at? Count to 10. This guy, I don't make sure that they don't leave the scene. That's my goal, is to keep them there. I mean, they want to leave it.
You can't time it out, though, right?
We can.
Okay.
We can't. We just make sure that they don't leave the scene. Seeking Safety is a lot for our clients. A lot of our clients, what I've done for Seeking Safety, and the majority of what I've done for Seeking Safety, is when I do a contract, especially for those that have the anger issues, like the handling anger, asking for help, keeping a contract. A lot of our clients, when I don't seek a safety for the trauma, a lot of them have anger. And when they have the anger, it's normal to have anger. And that's what we talked about, those that leave. They're mad at the people that didn't do anything about it.
But that anger's coming out and jumping into their relationships with their children or their bosses or
spouse.
Their spouse. Ouch. Their significant other. So they're very angry. And they're mad at everybody, or they're mad at, why did they stop it? Why didn't they do anything? So that's what we do, the contract. And there's really good on the Seeking Safety. They have really good contracts. They have really good skills. They have really good activities for these individuals.
So people begin to practice the stuff in there? And
it's really good. I mean, it's very good evidence-based practice skills, and I love it. I think it's very good for it. They have been in groups for drug and alcohol. I've done it with my clients, and I think it's been very effective. I really love it.
So what do people get? I mean, so people come in with this severe mental health disorder, and perhaps in addition to having trauma as its own standalone problem, and alcohol and drug problems, what do you see after people commit to this process and go through this process? What kind of outcomes do you see?
I've seen positive outcomes. I've seen actually positive outcomes. These clients have actually benefited. These clients have actually recovered. These clients have actually maintained stabilization. We've had a couple of successful cases. We've had a couple of clients who have actually graduated, completed, and actually have run Seeking Safety, smart recovery programs, and they've done really well.
So these people who come in aren't working. They may be in legal problems. They may be living on the streets and homeless and stuff. And you see people that are not only get like safe living arrangements and some sort of safe family structure, but also can kind of go back out and do community service and get jobs and do other things.
Exactly. I've seen clients who are on probation. Yeah, they have no jobs. They've given up. They feel like they're not going to get better. Nobody cares. You know, we're just, a lot of them are told, you guys are just getting paid. You guys don't care about us. You're just pretending. But yet when they're done, they're completed, they've been linked to the services. They've been linked to IVC. They've been linked to school. They've been linked to medication, everything. They're working now. They have jobs. They're running programs. They're educated. They're going to school again. They're doing well.
And these are the people that when they walked in your door had so many different big problems that most people would just look at these people and say,
Well, the important part besides them getting better is also having the family involved. And
yes. And that's the good thing about this program is that family is involved. We get everybody involved. And it's not just the client, it's everybody involved. They've involved, whether it's mom, dad, siblings, significant others, everybody's involved, which is awesome. It's a big, big part of it. So, I mean, we've had successful stories, seriously. I've been at all, the last 2 years the program has been up and running. I've seen it, and it's been awesome. It's been very awesome. It's been a very successful program.
In no small part, thanks to you, Ms. Castillo.
No, I think everybody's done a good job. The case managers, the program, the substance abuse counselors. I mean, I think all of us at the Mental Health Service Act has really worked as a team. Drug and alcohol, the doctor, the nurse, the case managers. Everybody.
It's a whole team.
It's a whole. And that's. I mean, since I've worked with drug and alcohol before, I think all of us have pulled together, and I think it's been a program that has worked in progress. That it's. We've all worked together, and we're all under, you know, I tell them we're under one roof, and we all work together. So we're not all far from each other, so we all kind of link together, and we're all like a team of parenting. We're all like, I told a client yesterday, we're like a net, because one client was afraid that he just wanted to fail us. I said, the thing about it is that you're growing your net bigger, so if you fall, we're all going to catch you. So he looked at it and goes, okay. I go, you're not going to fail us. We're all going to catch you. Mm-hmm. So he goes, okay. So it's like we're a big family. So
They have a mental health rehab tech or case manager. They have a substance abuse counselor, have a doctor, have a nurse. They have a therapist.
Yes.
They have a clinician, you.
And they have the clerical support. So they have a big team. They have a big support system.
So eyes and ears for the community. If they see people who must be in really bad pain because their lives have just completely fallen apart and there's substance use involved, there may be mental health problems, there may be trauma. Or if you see somebody with mental health problems, there may be substance use, there may be trauma, there may be some other stuff, and we've got the right place to go. Yeah.
So where can they go? Or where is the phone number they can contact?
They can contact the 336-8543. I'm guessing.
You're guessing.
I'm guessing because I'm...
You guessed correctly. You win a prize.
I guess. Or my number, 336-8540. That's my number. 1295 State Street. And the reason I'm also, because I had a client yesterday who wasn't too sure because he kept thinking it was an old drug and alcohol program. Mm-hmm. And he thought it was only the drug and alcohol program because they know it's an old Prop 36 program. But it's now the Mental Health Service Act program. So for those that everybody are hearing, it's not the drug and alcohol program. It's now the 1295 State Street Mental Health Service Act for all those dual diagnosed adult programs.
And then there's also an adolescent program.
That's right. And the bonus adolescent program. So it's for everybody.
For dual diagnosed adolescents.
Exactly. So it's a whole unit program for those that have mental health service, mental health and drug and alcohol programs for the youth and adolescents.
Because if it's already a problem, why grow up and wait till the problem's really bad?
Exactly.
Why not get it now?
So come, you guys, 1295 State Street, what you guys need, the families, friends, anybody, any questions, give us a call at 336-8540.
And if you come in and say you heard it on Let's Talk About It, your voice for community wellness in Imperial County, sponsored by Behavioral Health, you get like a coffee cup or something?
No. You get services.
You get services.
You get why? Well, yeah.
It'd
you
be
do.
Cool, though, wouldn't
Actually,
it?
You do, because Scott said it.
There
so
you go.
Scott will provide with the coffee cup.
You can ask Scott Dudley.
Exactly, Scott Dudley.
Listen, Esther, thanks for coming aboard today.
You're
really
welcome.
Appreciate it. Great show.
Thank you so much, Esther. Well, next week, I do have the calendar in front of me, and next week we have Mariana Villalas. She's from the SURE Helpline Crisis Center, and she's going to be talking, I think it's next month is the Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. So, very important subject. It's something that we want to stop. And we want...
Not teen dating, just the violence.
We want the violence to stop, the teen dating violence to stop. So give it awareness to our community membership of Imperial Valley and Mexicali Valleys So remember, next week, Mariana Villalaz from the Shore Helpline Crisis Center will be on the show.
And we'll see you this Saturday morning at the Rib Cook-Off.
Yes, and listening to Los Outpatients with our several of our Imperial County Behavioral Health staff and Imperial County also,
yes, from
HR.
County HR. They'll be chartering a helicopter to get them into the event because it's going to be so massive and the parking is so bad. You know, the highways will all be closed for several miles going into it. But they'll be there at our 1 o'clock plan, so we'll see you there.
Okay. I'll see you there.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.